This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hi, my name's Dick Dowd, and I'll be reading to you from the sports pages of the Cincinnati Inquirer on this Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. We're going to start with what's on the air in sports today here in the greater Cincinnati area, and we'll start with Major League Baseball. St. Louis is at Detroit. It's a 1 p.m. game on the Major League Baseball Network. Minnesota is at the Chicago White Sox. It'll be joined in progress 4 p.m. on the Major League Baseball Network. Reds are at San Diego, 4:10 p.m. Cincinnati time on the Bally Sports Ohio Network and 700 on your AM radio dial. New York Yankees at Baltimore, 6:30 p.m. on Major League Baseball Network, and the Los Angeles Dodgers at Arizona, again joined in progress, 10:30 p.m. on the Major League Baseball Network. NBA basketball, Eastern Conference playoffs, Miami at Boston, 7:30 p.m. on TNT, and the Western Conference playoffs, Dallas at the Los Angeles Clippers, 10 p.m. on the TNT network. And the National Hockey League, the Western Conference playoffs, Vegas at Dallas, 7 p.m. on ESPN. The Western Conference playoffs, Los Angeles at Edmonton, 9:30 p.m. on ESPN. And men's soccer, the Saudi Pro League, Al Nassr versus Al Khali, 1:45 p.m. on Fox Sports 2. UEFA Champions League, Real Madrid at Bayern Munich, 3 p.m. CBS Sports. And CONCACAF Champions League, the semifinals, the second leg, Columbus Crew at Monterrey, 10 p.m. tonight on the Fox on Fox Sports 1. And there's one tennis game. Oh, we got a couple tennis games for you. Madrid Open, the ATP quarterfinal, will be at 10 a.m., not too long from now, on the Tennis Network. And Madrid Open, ATP quarterfinals, the WTA quarterfinal at 2 p.m., again on the Tennis Network. So we're going to move now to upcoming events. And this Saturday, FC Cincinnati will be at Orlando for a 7:30 p.m. start. May 11th, they'll be at Columbus for a 7:45 p.m. start. And on May 15th, Atlanta comes to TQL Arena for a 7:30 p.m. start. The Reds, tonight they're at San Diego for a 4:10 p.m. start. Tomorrow they're off, and Friday, Baltimore comes to town, and the Reds will play Baltimore at 6:10 p.m. at Great American Ballpark. And with that, just because somebody told me to hit it out of the park, let's go up to the baseball standings, and we'll give you the National League Central, which is the home of our Reds. And in the Central Division on this date, the Chicago Cubs have won 18, lost 11. Their winning percentage is .621, and they're in first place. Milwaukee won 17, lost 11. They're in second place with a .607 winning percentage, half game behind those Chicago Cubs. And there's our Reds in third place. They've won 16, they lost 13. They got a .552 winning percentage, and they're only two games out of first place. Pittsburgh Pirates are in fourth place. They've won 14, they've lost 16. Their winning percentage is .467, and they're 4.5 games behind the first place Cubs. And St. Louis brings up the rear. They've won 13, they've lost 15. .464 winning percentage, and they're 4.5 behind those Chicago Cubs. So we'll move over here now to the sports page. We've got some great articles for you, and the headline in today's sports page is Reds in Awe of Ellie. And shortstop Dela Cruz zips throw 106.9 miles per hour to first base. It's by Gordon Wittenmeyer of the Cincinnati Inquirer and the USA Today Network. Nick Lodolo, Cy Young, quality night. Heimer Candelario's two big hits to end an 0-for-19 skid. Another home run by Ellie Dela Cruz. Nobody in the Cincinnati Reds clubhouse was talking about any of that when writers entered the room after the Reds' 5-2 victory over the San Diego Padres. Scribes, the only thing worth writing about tonight, catcher Luke Maley said, is that a human being threw a ball 106.9 miles per hour across the diamond. Wait, what? Tweet that one, left fielder Spencer Steer said. I'll tweet it. The clubhouse buzzed in every corner with wonderment and awe at, of all things, an errant throw with two outs in the bottom of the ninth Monday night. Because the number that flashed on the Major League Baseball feed Red staffer saw in that moment was thought to be beyond human limits and certainly beyond any velocity ever recorded on a throw. By a lot, Maley said, and former Reds pitcher Aroldis Chapman set the Major League velocity record with a 105.1 mile per hour pitch 14 years ago as a rookie in this same San Diego ballpark and has since matched it. Nobody has ever exceeded it until Ellie De La Cruz on this night, a shortstop. Incredible, closer Alexis Diaz said in Spanish. And maybe too incredible even, whatever the Reds saw on their feed, Major League Baseball could not validate the number because of what it considered bad data. In other words, a system issue tracking the throw. So De La Cruz doesn't get the record, at least officially. But add one more to the 22-year-old's growing list of legendary moments, official or not. To his credit, De La Cruz seemed more concerned that the throw did not result in an out when asked about it afterward. He didn't even seem sure if it felt like his hardest throw. Perhaps most impressive about the whole scene that played out in that clubhouse is those several minutes of wall-to-wall awe was that everyone in that room believed it was possible. That's the stuff of legends, all of which played out after just the 127th big league game of De La Cruz's career. I knew it was hard, but I didn't know it was that hard, Candelaria said of the ball that rose just beyond his leap. It was so hard, it just kept rising. The hardest anyone ever throws a ball to Candelaria while playing first? Maybe, he said. Or maybe one of his other throws. So we're going to move on back here to first page. And we got some Xavier women's tennis. And Xavier's been selected to the NCAA tourney. This is by Shelby Dermer of the Cincinnati Inquirer and the USA Today Network. Xavier University women's tennis is back in the NCAA championships. Gathered at Cintas Center on Monday night, the Musketeers celebrated a fifth all-time berth in the national tournament. Xavier was picked to play against Notre Dame in the first round at Varsity Tennis Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan, on the University of Michigan campus. Notre Dame, who's won 17 and lost 9, which lost in the Atlantic Coast Conference quarterfinals, is ranked number 30 in the latest Intercollegiate Tennis Association rankings. The Musketeers lost to Notre Dame 4-0 earlier this season in Louisville. And Xavier heads to the NCAA championships after winning its fourth consecutive Big East championship on April 22nd. The top-seeded Musketeers rallied from a 2-1 deficit to defeat number 2 DePaul 4-2 at the Case Tennis and Fitness Club in Case, South Carolina. Xavier, who's won 19 and lost 5, got conference championship singles wins from Imani Graham, Ann Rogenberg, Abigail Saminsky, and Abby Nugent. Rogenberg led Xavier with a team-high 19 singles victories this season, 18 in second singles, and has won 9 of her last 10 matches. She has also 15 wins and 6 losses in doubles contests with Graham, a senior and the reigning Big East Player of the Year. In first singles, Graham is 14 wins and 5 losses overall, and Saminsky is 12 wins and 4 losses in the fourth singles slot. Nugent was the Big East Freshman of the Year in 2023 after posting a combined 21-11 record between singles and doubles matches. A Springboro native who graduated from the Ohio Connections Academy, Nugent was the Ohio High School Athletic Association Division I single state champion in 2019. Nugent and freshman Ellie Brotherton have combined to go 12 wins and 7 losses in second doubles. Nugent is one of the two Greater Cincinnati prep products on the Musketeers NCAA-bound roster, along with junior Elizabeth Pendergrast, who was a 4-star recruit at St. Ursula Academy and won the Division I state singles title in 2020. Pendergrast had 17 combined wins with the University of Cincinnati last season. As a freshman for the 21-22 campaign, she was the first Bearcat to be named All-Conference since 2017. Pendergrast hasn't played this season after transferring mid-year from UC. And sophomore Emily Flowers and freshman Sophia Mazzucato are each 15 wins and 3 losses in singles and a combined 13 wins and 2 losses as doubles teammates. Senior Blessing Nwazuzu, that's her name, Blessing Nwazuzu, is 2 wins, 2 losses overall on the year. And Xavier heads to Ann Arbor looking for its first ever win in the NCAA championship. The Musketeers are 0 wins and 4 losses all time in the tournament, with first round losses the last 2 years in Columbus against Ohio State in 2023 and Vanderbilt in 2022. So we'll move now to, we're not sure of the next play. New details emerge about Higgins and the Bengals contract negotiations. This is by Kelsey Conway of the Cincinnati Inquirer. The Cincinnati Bengals placed the franchise tag on wide receiver T. Higgins for the upcoming season after not being able to agree on a long-term contract extension over the last 2 years. New details about the Bengals and Higgins negotiation process have emerged. Higgins never requested to become the highest-paid wide receiver in the National Football League, sources tell the Inquirer. In fact, the range Higgins was initially looking for is similar to what the Indianapolis Colts just gave wide receiver Michael Pittman this year after placing the franchise tag on him. The Colts and Pittman agreed to a 3-year deal worth $70 million with an annual average salary of $23 million. Pittman's contract falls in line with the deals in the Washington Commanders gave wide receiver Terry McLaurin and what the San Francisco 49ers gave wide receiver Deebo Samuel, two other examples of the type of contract Higgins was originally seeking from the Bengals. And McLaurin signed a 3-year contract extension with the Commanders worth $68.2 million with an average annual salary of $22 million. Samuel signed a 3-year deal worth $71 million with an average annual salary of $23 million. So how much did the Bengals offer Higgins? Well, the Bengals never approached the $20 million range for Higgins, sources told the Inquirer. Due to the original offer Cincinnati's front office gave Higgins for his annual salary, the two sides never advanced to the next round of conversations, which would have been about guaranteed money. And sources also confirmed to the Inquirer and any speculation that Higgins and his representation are asking for a specific amount of guaranteed money from the Bengals is not accurate. When the Inquirer reached out to the Bengals for a comment on the subject, they reiterated the following quote from head coach Zach Taylor. "We're excited for T to have a great year for us," Taylor said. "We think he's our best chance to help us win a Super Bowl. I've enjoyed working with T the last 4 years. I expect this year to be no different." And Higgins' request for a trade this offseason came after the two sides never re-engaged in negotiations. Typically, when an NFL team uses the franchise tag on a player, it's used to give both sides more time to reach a long-term deal. Cincinnati's front office has made it clear they don't plan to trade Higgins. And defensive end Josh Allen of the Jacksonville Jaguars and Pittman of the Colts are two examples of players who were tagged by their teams who eventually got a long-term deals done in the spring. And Higgins' stats with the Bengals? In 4 seasons with the Bengals, Higgins has caught 257 passes for 3,600 684 yards and 24 touchdowns. He is coming off an injury-riddled season that led him to missing five games last year. Higgins amassed 1,000 receiving yards twice so far in his professional campaign. And Higgins and the Bengals have until July 15 to reach a long-term deal, and if not, Higgins will play this season and make $21.8 million. When a team applies the franchise tag on a player, the number is set based on the average of the top five salaries at the position over the past 5 years. The highest paid wide receiver in the National Football League right now is A.J. Brown, who just agreed to a 3-year extension with the Eagles worth $96 million. Brown's annual salary is now $32 million, and Tyreek Hill of the Miami Dolphins is the second highest paid wide receiver in the National Football League, making $30 million a year. Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase are next in line for extensions at the receiver position. Jefferson and the Minnesota Vikings have yet to come to an agreement on a new deal, and it's one Cincinnati's front office will closely monitor. The Bengals picked up Chase's fifth-year option last week, giving the team more time to work on a long-term deal with the Pro Bowl wideout. And Chase said he wants to see what Jefferson has offered before engaging in contract discussions. And with that, we'll move over here. An Ohio high school softball. This is where still on the front page. An analysis and predictions on 2024 Southwest Ohio sectional draws. This is by Brendan Connolly of the Cincinnati Inquirer and the USA Today. With 1 week left in the Ohio high school softball regular season, there are still some marquee matchups on tap as a few conference races are decided. Thanks to Sunday's draw, teams are beginning to prepare for their first-round sectional opponents and beyond. Let's look at how the state tournament draw shook out for Southwest Ohio's teams. All statistics and records are through April 28. And Division I, the D1 district tournaments are going to be fun. It helps that many of the major contenders are spread out across the four districts and even further the eight sectionals. The bottom half of the Southwest 2 bracket could be the most competitive sectional in D1. It features Lakota East, Mount Notre Dame, Oak Hills, St. Ursula, Turpin, and West Claremont. The Cougars have locked up the girls' Greater Catholic League, and the Thunderhawks are in contention in the Greater Miami Conference. A few teams struggled in the regular season, but there is no telling what could happen in the postseason. The most anticipated sectional final is a predicted game between Mason and Milford. The Comets own a one-run loss to Kings, but recently beat Lebanon 2-1. The Eagles could stretch their winning streak from 5 to 10 games to end the regular season. Also keep an eye on Talawanda. The Braves are looking to make a run to the district final, but will have to go through league foe Harrison before facing Lakota West or Western Brown, and they've won the Southwest Ohio Conference for the first time and have winning record for the fourth straight season. And Cincinnati D1 Girls Softball District Championships prediction in 2024. Southwest 1, Fairfield versus Kings. Southwest 2, Lebanon versus Lakota East. Southwest 3, Mason versus Beaver Creek. And Southwest Centerville versus Talawanda. And Division 2, each district bracket featuring at least one Cincinnati area team also features a team ranked in the latest statewide top 10 poll. In other words, it's going to be tough but not impossible for a local D2 team to make it to the regional tournament. Taylor is in the same sectional as conference opponents Reading and Wyoming. The Yellow Jackets also face Mercy McCauley later this week. The two could also play in the postseason. Taylor has 3 losses, each by 1 run, but is winning its games by an average of 11 runs. Wilmington and Fenwick are 5th and 6th seeds in the Southwest 2 district, but they must go through one or both of the 2nd-seeded Franklin and 3rd-seeded Eaton. Look for Baden and New Richmond to clash in their sectional final. The Rams have won 14 of 17 thanks to the return of starting pitcher Haley Klaver. The Lions showed their potential with an early season win over Taylor and will finish their season with contests against Mount Notre Dame, Western Brown, and Wyoming. and Cincinnati D2 Girls Softball District Championship predictions in 2024. Southwest Taylor versus Greenville, Greenville Southwest, Kenton Ridge versus Eaton Southwest, Baden versus Indian Lake Division III. Williamsburg is having its best season since it advanced to the 2021 regional final. The Wildcats have a solid path to their divisional final. The only other team in that sectional with a winning record is Seven Hills. Their reward for a sectional championship would be most likely Miami East. Waynesville receives the top seed in Southwest II thanks to a 14-win and 3-loss record. Their only conference losses are to Carlisle, the top seed in Southwest III. Opposite Waynesville, Bethel Tate and Claremont Northeastern should do battle with the right to face the Spartans. The Rockets have beaten the Tigers twice this season. In the top half of the Southwest III bracket, Cincinnati Country Day, East Clinton, North College Hill, and Norwood will all try to take down Carlisle, which received the top seed in the bracket. And Cincinnati D3 Girls Softball District Championships prediction is in 2024. Southwest 1, Miami versus East Williamsburg. Southwest 2, Waynesville versus Claremont Northeastern. Southwest 3, Carlisle versus Arcanum. And Division 4, all the Cincinnati area teams are grouped in the bottom half of the Southwest 3 bracket. Cincinnati Christian will face the winner of Lachlan and New Miami when Fayetteville Perry will take on Georgetown. And Cincinnati D4 Girls Softball District Championships predictions in 2024, Southwest 3 Ansonia versus Fayetteville. And that's where the article ends, friends. So we're going to move along here. We've got Red Spotlight by Gordon Wittenmeyer of the Cincinnati Inquirer and the USA Today Network. And the dateline is San Diego. Ellie De La Cruz might eventually need a day off. Well, probably. Someday. Maybe next month. Maybe August. I don't have an off day for him on the radar right now, Cincinnati Reds manager David Bell said. Not if Bell wants to keep scoring runs on the radar. The Reds' clear first-month MVP, De La Cruz, has almost single-handedly kept an otherwise struggling lineup afloat through April. The constant beacon and biggest threat, one of the biggest threats in the league, through a month of injuries and illnesses for most of the lineup regulars. He and Spencer Steer are the only Reds who haven't missed a game so far. Along with Jake Fraley, they're two of the three to provide consistent production all month. But nobody has done what De La Cruz has so far, ever. When he opened this week's series in San Diego with a tone-setting homer in the first inning Monday, it gave him 8 home runs to go with his major league-leading 18 steals. All 8 of the homers in 20-game stretch after going homerless in the Reds' first 9 games. The home run total and 17 of the steals came in April, the first Major League Baseball player with at least that many homers and that many steals in any calendar month since at least 1901 per MLB.com stat guru Sarah Langs. Not that De La Cruz is charting his personal stats or even setting goals for any milestone numbers. I'm just playing the game day by day, he said. I want to win. He's the biggest offensive reason the Reds have been able to do that so far. That 5-2 win over the Padres Monday, De La Cruz's 127th game in the big leagues, clinched the Reds' first winning April since 2013, which perhaps not coincidentally was their last 90-win season and last full-season playoff year. Maybe even more impressive, De La Cruz has been a fielding beacon at shortstop for the Reds since a rough second week of the season defensively. Until a high throw in the bottom of the ninth inning, trying to prevent an infield hit and end the game, he hadn't committed an error since April 9, occasionally showing a spectacular range and more than occasionally flashing 90-plus mile-per-hour arm strength. There's still going to be growing pains, Bell said. It's still all part of the normal process. That's why we looked so close at how Ellie is handling it. The work he's doing, his process to keep getting better, we're thrilled with all that. Every day, in fact, until further notice. until November, if you ask Dela Cruz, a 100 steal pace, rigorous position and all. I want to play every day, the whole season, he said, and with 22-year-old legs, maybe he can. Not that management is going to actually let that happen. Whatever might be on the radar at this point is the season or not. The game and conversations we have with Ellie every day will tell us the right time, Bell said. As long as he's healthy and as long as he's playing with a lot of energy, then yes, we want to be proactive and make sure he keeps it going like that. But the Reds have scheduled off days Thursday and Monday and again at the end of their next road trip, an especially long three-city road trip to the West Coast that ends May 19th. Maybe then, maybe not. I know he wants to play every single day, Bell said. That mindset is something I want to support, and I don't want to take that away from him, but I'll definitely be aware of looking for days if he needs it. Especially considering that the way he looks right now, Dela Cruz might not get an All-Star break. And so we'll move along here. And the Reds' early MVP has notched a Major League Baseball first in April. And a little Bengals news for you here. Roster gaps remain after NFL draft. The 2024 NFL draft is in the books, and while we know the winners and losers, there are still plenty of questions left to answer. And then we got the Las Vegas Raiders quarterback. Arguably the most glaring deficiency left unfulfilled, the Raiders are retaining uncertainty at the sport's most important position. The Raiders, of course, could use invested draft capital to move up to take a quarterback, but the Raiders felt confident enough last season in Aiden O'Connell to bench Jimmy Garoppolo. And the Miami Dolphins, defensive tackle. On one hand, it made sense that the Dolphins didn't re-sign Christian Wilkins to free agency. Wilkins drew what would have been a massive pay increase before he eventually signed with the Raiders. And I'm sorry, friends, we got Atlanta Falcons need an edge rusher, the Baltimore Ravens offensive line concerns, and Buffalo Bills wide receiver concerns. We're going to have to get to that a little, you know, maybe later in the week, because this is all the time we have for sports on this Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. My name is Dick Dowd, and I've enjoyed reading to you from the sports pages of the Cincinnati Enquirer.